On this Ag Perspectives podcast, we have got Ethan Lane, Vice President of Government Affairs for the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. He's head of their Washington, D.C. office, and wanted to talk with Ethan about several things going on in D.C., starting with the latest rule proposal regarding the Packers and Stockyards Act that just released from USDA. We're back after this. National Livestock is dedicated to being your first choice for cattle marketing, risk management, order buying services, and cattle financing. We specialize in providing first-class service to those in the cattle business. And now we're proud to tell you that Dakota Moss with Livestock Risk Services has joined the National Livestock family, offering tremendous expertise when it comes to LRP contracts. You can trust National because all the experts are in one place. Learn more by going to nationallivestock.com. We're talking today with Ethan Lane, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, their Washington, D.C. office. Ethan, early today, USDA has released details on what we've kind of been waiting on for quite a while, potential new rules that fall under the Packers and Stockyards Act. Give me your first impressions of what you've seen thus far.
Well, this is the second in that three-rule package. You know, historically, the GPSA rules, as we used to call them, now the Packers and Stockyards rules, are a suite of rules that focus on competition in the agricultural supply chains, particularly the meat and poultry supply chains. And it has typically focused in the past on that standard for harm to competition, right? If you get one price for your cattle and your neighbor gets a different price and you don't like that, you know, what is the threshold after which you can sue for damages because you didn't get paid the same price? You know, it's important that there be a structure in there to make sure we're regulating fairness. But in the past, Secretary Vilsack has sought to take all those controls off and essentially allow an environment where anybody who doesn't get paid the same as their neighbor can then, lawyer up and go to court on it, which would really make it difficult for our producers to go after premiums, to distinguish their product in the marketplace, and do all those things that we know are leading to higher and higher quality beef all the time. The first rule of that package was dealing with the poultry tournament system, so not one we have any interest in. The second rule, which is the one that just was finalized and announced this morning, is what they're calling their inclusive competition rule. That is very much focused on kind of the Biden administration's agenda of, you know, protected classes and making sure that disadvantaged folks have the same access, you know, to these supply chains that others do. And so that's what this rule deals with. We had some concerns on this rule. This is not the rule that anybody of the three, this is not the rule that anybody is objecting the most too. There were some concerning things in there about USDA trying to define what a market vulnerable individual would be. You know, our concern with that is we don't think anybody that's in the cattle industry markets every week is not market vulnerable, right? If you're in the market, you're market vulnerable. But attempting to kind of create a different kind of protected class of producers beyond those normal protected classes to give them special treatment, that was something that was concerning to us. It would appear that some of that language has been pulled out of this final rule. That's something we focused on and commented on. If so, that's progress. That's a better result on this rule. But we'll have to look at the text now that it's out and kind of see what it looks like. But the ball game is really on this third rule that hasn't been released yet, that has been sent in proposed form over to the White House. That's the one that attacks that harm to competition standard and would be really destructive to our producers. You know, these are the rules we were trying to defund in this appropriations process that's moving forward right now. We were in a good spot. The livestock groups were in a good spot get Congress on a bipartisan basis to agree with us that this was a dangerous path to go down and defund these rules. Unfortunately, the American Farm Bureau Federation, has taken kind of a different view here. They're very supportive of the secretary's agenda here. For whatever reason, they're not feeling the same pressure to support their producers and differentiating their products in the supply chain. So at the 11th hour, they kind of inserted themselves into this over the objections of the livestock groups, which very much complicated that situation in the 11th hour, which, you know, when you're having tight negotiations like this, those are difficult things to have happen. So we didn't get included in the final bill. We'll have to look for other avenues to express our concerns with these rules. And we'll see how they shape up over the next few months.
I guess at this point, you know, the second drop that just came, that again, as you mentioned, that's simply kind of laying the groundwork for this third level. What are you, in other words, obviously we've often talked about, well, this is GIPSA redone, or another run at the old GIPSA concept. What is the big worry about these final set of rules still to come from USDA?
It really is that harm to competition standard. It's the threshold by which, you know, Packers and Stockyards Division, USDA regulators would look at a practice in the marketplace. So if you have a packer that is selling or buying cattle on a formula or a grid, or offering access to that formula or a grid, how are they offering access, right? Are they discriminating? Are they not allowing access to somebody because of the color of their skin, or because of their gender, or their religion, or something like that? Those things are already prohibited by a lot of really good federal laws. This would sort of, in a redundant way, this second rule, create another layer of that, which is, you know, like I said, because it's already against the law, not terribly concerning to us. The next part of that, though, is basically looking at whether the fact that you're paying premiums on certain cattle, whether that be because the genetics meet whatever this packer is looking for, or the production practice, or whatever else, if it's going to be able to qualify for CAB, paying premiums on that and not paying a premium to somebody else raising cattle, the length to which that other producer would have to go to illustrate that they have been harmed as part of that process, rather than just, you know, you pick between two different products, you choose one because it meets your needs and the other doesn't, and you go on down the road. That line, where that line rests, is really the crux of these rules. That's really what we're talking about here is, is there a line and where is it drawn between picking a product that fits your business model and discriminating against somebody in an unfair way? So, you know, it's been tackled different ways over the years. The Trump administration established kind of a set of criteria that made sense to us to frame this up. So there's been different ways of approaching this, but this has been a real pet project of Secretary Vilsack's throughout his two terms as secretary. This is one of his sort of marquee issues, and he very much believes that that there shouldn't be a standard, basically, that anybody should be able to sue anybody else if they don't get the same price for their product, which is, in our opinion, a very dangerous road to go down.
And the great fear there is that all the premiums that we've been able to establish by, you know, producing a better carcass, a better eating experience for consumers, that's in jeopardy.
Right. Well, we talk about market signals, right? You know, the consumer indicates what they want by buying the thing that is attractive to them. The supply chain then moves to meet that demand by producing more of that thing that is, you know, meeting consumer expectation and that they're willing to pay for. They then send those market signals down the supply chain by saying, we will pay you more if you produce an animal that meets these specs, right? That produces more prime, that produces, you know, carcasses that are going to qualify for certified Angus beef, that produces carcasses that are non-hormone treated. All those different premiums we know are available in the marketplace, those are the result of market signals. Those are things that are being sent from the consumer through the wholesalers, the packers, on down all the way to the cow-calf producer, as far as, hey, if you want to make more money in your cattle, these are the attributes you should be striving for in order to qualify for more premiums. That's the system that's in jeopardy if you make any of that kind of practice somehow against the law. What you'll see is the supply chain basically saying, well, I don't want to get sued, so everybody's going to get paid the same price on their cattle.
And I guess at that point, then the packer, wholesaler, the folks that are cutting up the carcasses, they'll just kind of, you know, pick and choose what they want off those animals that have all been priced the same way.
Well, that's the frustrating part of this is, you know, we always talk about not wanting to give the packer more control, and we're all on board for that agenda. But what you're doing is basically block granting them to the packer, and then the packer figures out where they can make more premiums. Rather than our producers sharing in those premiums, you know, the high quality cattle are still going to make it to the packer, but then the packer is going to price those up. You know, they're going to grade those carcasses. The ones that grade prime, they're going to make more money on, but the producer is not going to get paid more on them. And for our purposes at NCBA, our focus is always on whatever is going to ensure that our producers are going to make more money on those cattle. That's always our focus, right? How do we make sure the producer shares in as much of that premium as possible? And we believe that this effort by Secretary Vilsack works against that.
All right. So how close do you think we are to seeing that perhaps be put out there as a final rule?
Well, the third rule has not been revealed yet. It's over at OMB at the White House, which is kind of the first step in the process. So after they finish their review, which could take months, it could take weeks, we never know. It's kind of a black box over there. At that point, they could then release that as a proposed rule. So everybody would get a chance to look at it. There'd be a comment period, could be 30 days up to, you know, 120 days for everyone in the country that has an interest in this to comment on that rule and say, hey, this we like, this we don't, you should think about changing this. They would then close that comment period, look at those comments, and some months later, release a final rule after going back to the White House for another review at OMB. So this is a fairly long process that they have to go through that they're just beginning on this third rule. So, you know, it's one of those things where you look at the end of the administration coming up, you know, whether the president gets reelected or not, we don't know. But, you know, this is one of those that would run into the end of that 4-year term, probably before we'd see a final rule, which always creates kind of an interesting dynamic. If there's a new president, you know, they look at those old rules and decide whether they're going to freeze them, keep them, roll them back. So we're kind of getting into a time frame where that's going to be some of the math on that third rule.
You mentioned obviously the elections. We're speaking on Super Tuesday. I don't know. There was the hope at one point that this would give us some clarity on what's going to happen come November for the at least for the presidential elections. I don't think that's going to happen on Super Tuesday, is it? I mean,
you know, it's not. You know, I think we can probably predict based on what we've seen so far. You're going to see the president, the former president, Donald Trump, win those primaries, probably all of them, if not most of them. You'll see Nikki Haley register quite a few votes in those primaries as well, which, you know, is a challenge for the president, for the former president, because he's going to have to look at how you win those Haley voters over in a general, because he's going to need them. You know, to go up against Joe Biden, who is going to have, you know, Democrats voting pretty much, you know, uniformly behind him. So it's, you start to look at turnout in these primaries, you start to look at, you know, how energized the base of each party is, you know, how lockstep they are behind former President Trump, how many folks are voting for Haley that are saying in those exit polls they're never going to vote for President Trump. We've seen some of that in Iowa and other places, and all that's going to have to be factored in. So all we're really going to learn today is more data, more information on kind of where the electorate's heads are at, what they're thinking right now, and where we might be headed going into the fall.
And in the backdrop of that, up on Capitol Hill, you've got the battle over the appropriations continuing. Finally got that first six set of appropriation bills bundled together, a minibus, if you want to call it that. Your thoughts on what that does or doesn't do?
You know, there's a lot of good stuff in there for the cattle industry. There's about $15 million for to pay for electronic ear tags for our producers, you know, to comply with this rulemaking that we think is coming from USDA on animals moving interstate over 18 months. That's going to be expensive, and we've worked hard to make sure our producers aren't bearing the cost of complying with that. As that rule goes through the system, we were glad to see some money in that final package to help offset those costs for producers. There's a lot of good riders in there that prohibit ELD devices for livestock haulers, that prohibit the listing of the greater sage grouse as an endangered species, that prohibit the EPA from monitoring and reporting greenhouse gas emissions on livestock operations. Things that we fight hard for every year to make sure we're protecting our producers in these processes. But, you know, the reality is Speaker Johnson has a House Republican conference that is not working as a team right now. He's got that Freedom Caucus element that votes against basically everything. And with a two-seat majority, what that means is his negotiating power is greatly diminished when going up against the Senate that's controlled by Democrats and the White House. If he had his conference voting in lockstep, he would be able to pass that bill just with Republicans in the House and essentially say, this is the position of the House. Well, he can't do that because he has Freedom Caucus members who are voting no. which means he has to pass that bill under what they call the suspension calendar, which is what they'll do later this afternoon. The suspension bypasses the Rules Committee and goes straight to the floor and requires a higher threshold. Two-thirds of members of the House have to vote in favor of the bill. That means you need Democrats to pass it, which means that while Mike Johnson would like to have included all of these riders and make it a much more conservative bill coming out of the House, he now has to attract Democrats to the bill, which means watering that bill down. So while the Freedom Caucus believes that they're scoring some kind of moral conservative victory, all they really did was water that bill down, force that process in order for it to get across the finish line. So kind of a frustrating such a set of circumstances for the speaker to deal with, but it's the reality of the conference and what we're dealing with on Capitol Hill right now. But it should pass on suspension this afternoon. We'll see the ratios of Republicans to Democrats. It'll then go to the Senate where they will spend a couple days working their process to pass it and onto the president's desk before they shift their focus to that second six bills here in the next couple days.
Can they get that second set done, you think, successfully here in March?
That's been viewed as largely less controversial. You know, a lot of defense spending and things like that tend to have pretty broad support. It'll have its challenges too, but a lot of the real fighting was in this first package.
If that's done, hey, we got April, May. Could we actually get some conversation on a farm bill?
You know, conversation, sure. But, you know, I think the reality of that is that this same political dynamic that the speaker is dealing with isn't going anywhere in this Congress. So, you know, you start talking about a $1.4 trillion farm bill and the vast majority of that going to programs like SNAP that have a lot of opposition, you know, on their growth from Republicans in Congress. You have some unresolved issues with what to do with that $20 billion, now probably more like $15 billion in conservation spending out of the Inflation Reduction Act from a couple of years ago. There's some unresolved questions there, and I think that work is going to continue through this year. When you actually get to a vote, it kind of remains in question. I know they're still looking at an April-May window to try to get that bill on the House floor. You know, we were hopeful they're going to be able to get that done. The ag committees are doing great work here. Both Republicans and Democrats, both House and Senate, they're working through that process, but they have a really challenging political dynamic in the rank and file to navigate to try to get something done. So it's despite their best efforts, and they do deserve a lot of credit, we could still be talking about this next year in the new Congress, and it wouldn't be the first time that's happened.
Thank you, Ethan. Ethan Lane, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, their Washington, D.C. Offices, talking about a variety of things going on inside the D.C. Beltway. On the Oklahoma Farm Report, I'm Ron Hayes.